All righty, we continue. Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. We have a conversation with Steve Spagnuolo that I recorded earlier today that will play for you coming up 20 minutes from now. So appreciate Steve carving out some time with us today. Let's, though, before we get to that, update you on some of the biggest stories in the sports world with some audio. And we call that segment the News Brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
All righty. Let's start things off after the Super Bowl on the NFL Network. Juju Smith-Schuster finds out he made $1 million as a bonus after the Super Bowl.
Are you aware of the incentive that you hit today?
Nah. What's up? I made some extra money.
Do you want to know?
I know, yeah, let me know. What's up?
Okay, so you had to play at least half the offensive snaps.
Okay.
And the Chiefs have to win. Check, big check for $1 million.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I don't know what that's like.
Hey, don't shake my hand. Slide me some over here.
No. How about a little help for the guy who gave me the news?
Yeah, give the guy that gave me the news, huh?
Yeah, give it a little bit. It's all right.
Send a cash out, man.
I don't recognize the voice who's doing the interview. Sound like Ack a little bit. Hickey.
You know who that was?
Who was that?
Chris Rose.
That was Chris Rose?
Wow, Chris Rose and Ack. Maybe we'll hear Ack on the Super Bowl sidelines next year then.
But I feel like that would be a line that Ack would say. Because I've been here before, like when I've had dinner. Oh, you want to give me some of that, Chief? Like, how about the guy that asked you that gave you the news? I could see Ack saying that.
Oh, Chief, how about 5% there for the news bearer?
It, like, reminded me of the time where Ack brought that mac and cheese into the office. And he was just like, oh, you know, you should just try some of this mac and cheese. And then I did it. I said, it's wonderful. He's like, oh, you know, glad I can help you out there. It sounded very Rich Ackerman-like.
I guess congrats to Chris Rose. I will say it's a good thing for him in his career, or a good thing for Ack. Maybe that's, you know.
Yeah, probably a good thing for Ack. Also, Juju Smith-Schuster today. I actually like what Juju did. How about yourself, where he posted the Valentine's Day card, and it was of James Bradbury, and it says, I'll hold you when it matters most. Everyone's freaking out about this. Oh, it's classless, with especially the way that Bradbury handled it after the game. I thought it was funny. I thought it was one of those things you laugh at, and if people's feelings are hurt, just tough luck. You can't please everyone.
I guess the thing for me is I feel weird about bragging about a penalty. If he scored a touchdown and there was like some sort of Valentine's Day planned words about him burning it, Bradbury, different. Just feels weird, like a penalty. Like, he obviously caused a penalty, but it just feels weird that like
now,
you're bragging about that, basically.
To be fair, I felt the same way. Remember Eagles and Commanders this year when Taylor Heinicke, he got called for... Or they called the, what was it, the late hitter roughing the passer?
Them, yeah, one of the two, yeah.
And he got up and he celebrated, and I go, if you're celebrating a penalty, you shouldn't get the penalty. So in this case, he is celebrating the penalty. Was it unnecessary? Absolutely. Was it hilarious? Absolutely as well. But A.J. Brown did not like this. And he said, first off, congratulations, y'all deserve it, but this is lame. You were on the way out of the league before Mahomes resurrected your career on your one-year deal, TikTok boy. He admitted that he grabbed you, but don't act like you like that or ever was. But congratulations again. That just got real personal. And I'm also here for that as well. I like this.
TikTok boy. Did you see what CJ Gardner-Johnson said?
Oh, no.
He chimed in.
What did he say?
He goes, I have more INTs this year than he had touchdowns. Maybe I should switch to receiver.
But here's the problem. Even though you could argue it's a bad look for Juju Smith-Schuster, I think it's as equally as a bad look if you're the Eagles because you just lost the game.
Agreed. He has the trump card in the end of, I won the game, I got the ring, you did it.
Yes, and that's one of his responses, I think, to A.J. Brown. I think that's, yeah, he said, glad you were finally able to get that off your chest after all these years. Good game, bro. Thumbs up, and then he put the ring emoji. Now, don't get me wrong. Juju is obnoxious. I thought he was obnoxious in his last few years in Pittsburgh. I thought some of the stuff got blown out of proportion, right? Like, people actually using the TikTok dances before the game as motivation, I thought was just a joke. I remember going on a rant about that and how just ridiculous it was. Juju hasn't always been my favorite player, but I do like personality. And there's one thing you can't question about Juju Smith-Schuster is the personality part of it.
He will change for no one, that's for sure. He will do the TikToks, he'll talk his smack. And like I said, when you win the ring, you can talk all you want.
Will he be back, I guess, in Kansas City? Or is someone just going to give him a ridiculous payday?
I mean, he had an okay year. It's not like, you know, he lit it up where it's like teams
thousand
are
yards,
sprinting,
pretty much.
Sprinting to sign him. If I'm him, I would return.
Yeah, I think he needs Mahomes.
I take a discount, but I think it'll help his career better than if you go to, I don't know, Atlanta, let's say.
Well, that offense is actually perfect for him. There's no true number one wide receiver. Like, it's really Kelsey, even though he's a tight end. And Juju is more of a two than a one. Now, he may be the most recognizable name in that receiving core that they have, but that's not really saying much. But I think when you only ask so much of him, that's probably where you get the best version of Juju Smith-Schuster. Because when Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh, he kind of showed that he wasn't a number one wide receiver.
As long as Kelsey's on the field, he'll always be the second thought, which, again, like you said, is perfect for his role.
Yeah. Now, Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh what year?
2019, right?
Yeah.
That was the infamous Hard Knocks.
That's right.
When he didn't play for the Raiders.
So when he had that 1,400-yard season, that was with AB in 2018.
Yeah, he had a big last year when AB was there. And then 2019 was a little different.
Well, yeah. He played 12 games in 20. I just pulled it up. 12 games in 2019 with the Steelers, 552 yards. 16 in 2020, 831. And only played 5 games last year and had a 129 yards receiving. So it's all right. You provided us some comedy today, so I appreciate it. Aaron Rodgers, talking about comedy, says he hasn't started his darkness retreat yet. This courtesy of the Pat McAfee Show.
Listen, I'm not in my darkness retreat yet.
What?
Oh, and yesterday.
What?
Nope. This thing has been planned for about 4 months, and it was always the same date, always the end of this week.
Oh.
So anybody with knowledge to the opposite of that, it's fake news. There's an inner circle, right? And in my inner circle, nobody talks to Ian Rappaport, to Adam Schefter.
What?
Or to any of those people, okay? So if you're one of those people who's talking to those people, it's a great reminder for you, you're not in the inner circle.
What was the point of that? Just to trash Rappaport and Schefter?
I think it was to trash people that think they're on the inside, but they're really on the outside. Like, he's not trashing them. I think he's trashing the people that are giving them their information.
Well, no offense, Aaron. I don't think anyone actually wants to join you on this darkness retreat and are jealous that they're not in your inner circle.
Is it just him, though? Is the inner circle going on the darkness retreat?
You think he's just, I don't know, like, what is he, locking himself in a room for, like, a week?
I think it's, like, what, 4 days of total darkness, I think?
No, I think there has to be, like, some group activity there.
What do you can't see, though. What's a group activity if it's complete darkness?
Hey, if the lights go off here in the studio, do you want to be sitting here alone?
No, but if you are, he is actively going to the darkness. Like, if the lights just go off here, it's happenstance, and it's like, oh, me and Hugh are here.
I would imagine there is some circle that goes with you and that are participating in the same darkness retreat. Here's my multi-million dollar question, because you think this is more of like a clearing of the mind kind of thing.
Yeah, similar to the ayahuasca or the...
Yes, where you're not plugged into social media or any electronics either.
The purge he did last year.
Does his new girl, I think they're dating, Mallory Edens. Does she go with him?
I got to look it up. I think this is solo. I think he's going on his own. If he asks her to go, would you go?
I would say we're no longer a couple.
Wow. You break up?
Yes.
If you had a girlfriend, that
was... You know
why?
Because this is...
10 out of 10.
No.
And she goes,
Aaron Rodgers get any girl that he wants.
I get it, but I'm saying, just if you are dating a very attractive girl and she says, Zach, I really like you. I'm going into a literal dark place for the next... 92 hours.
And I had to go with her?
Do you want... I would like you to come with me.
No shot.
You'd say...
Nope.
Not only no, I'm breaking up just for the thought of asking.
Well, man, does Nookie time happen here on this darkness retreat?
No idea. Probably not.
Then no. considering, there was nookie time, I'm then all
I think
in.
You're there to clear the – I mean, maybe it helps clear the mind. I don't know. Yeah. You can make the argument. Maybe it does. So
depends
actually,
who you are.
Yeah.
But this is why if I'm Mallory Edens, I wouldn't go. This seems too much like the last girlfriend. Like, this is an idea from the last girlfriend, I have a feel, who was like a witch.
Blue?
Yeah, this is,
name, something like that?
This is some witch crap, I feel like, going on this darkness retreat.
This or the purge? I forget the name of the purge. You know what I mean? You know the body purge he did?
Oh,
I forget the name of it.
The Panchakarma cleanse.
Yes. Would you rather do the Panchakarma cleanse or would you rather do a 4-day darkness retreat?
Yeah.
4 days, though.
Well, there was like a lot of vomiting and other things.
Yes.
If this is just locking yourself
in a room of darkness.
Is it a resort? Maybe that's just like it.
No. Let's just say it's
there's
your bedroom.
A wing for this?
4 days in basically what is a bedroom. So there's a bed there, maybe a
what
soft
are you
floor.
Eating?
No, great question. I guess you have to be somewhere where people could give you food.
Bring a bunch of protein bars?
Maybe.
So it's basically like us at Radio Row if you just turn the lights off.
Yes, exactly right. In a dark room with a bunch of protein bars and nothing else for 4 days.
You know what? I think we should. I think us as a network should go on a darkness retreat. That's what they would like. We'll send like Mraz DA, Rome, Ryder, you're coming. I'll go. Maggie Perloff, Amy, JR. We're all going to darkness
Samter.
Retreat.
He'd love that.
I don't know if I could deal with Samter in a darkness retreat.
Is it? What if it's like one of those last man standing? Like everyone's, it's not the length. It's just you stay there till the
what
last
is this
person
now?
Stands.
Survival of the fittest now?
I wonder who would stay there the longest. I don't know.
I think,
wouldn't.
I think Bill.
I would be mentally tough enough. I'll tell you that.
I think it would be Bill. As much as I love Bill, I feel like Bill is probably the most competitive.
That's true. He would turn into like a personal, almost like MJ vendetta of, I'm going to outlast everyone here.
Yeah. And he would also just say enough things that you're like, okay, as much as I love Bill Ryder, how many bizarre things he'll make up about people when he sees you in person. Like I've seen the way that he's tried to troll me and troll you in person. We love Bill. Where I would go, okay, I'm just leaving. I'm leaving the island. I've had enough.
All right, so we know you'd be one of the first ones out.
In
a survivor-esque darkness retreat.
I think I would make like half of the show.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if it's like 39 days, like actual Survivor, you day 18, 19, maybe wave the white flag.
Oh, that's
say.
A lot. Well, I also think a lot of people would fold very quickly.
Well, yes. 24 hours, I bet you half the group would drop out.
Yeah. When Mraz realized he can't get a slice of pizza, he would be out.
He'd be the first one out there.
Get me out of here. I'm out of here. Aaron Rodgers says, no matter what his future brings, Green Bay will always be home.
18 years, man.
It's a long time.
That's always going to be home.
Till you leave. Like my parents right now, they're selling our childhood home. They're downsizing. I haven't lived my parents in what? On a full-time basis in like since college? Or my senior year of high school? You know, is that still my home? It was my home. It's no longer my home. The Green Bay Packers are his home. If he's not there next year, I get the expression like, oh, it'll always be home. It'll always be a place you're welcome back to, but literally won't be your home anymore because you want to leave and you want to go build a nice house somewhere else. Jim Irsay mentions how much he likes the Alabama quarterback, Bryce Young.
Do you stay put? Do you trade up? You know, there's many things you can do. They took Jalen in the second round. So,
trade back.
So, he likes
that'll
picks.
That'll be a Twitter freaking quote.
He likes picks. Although the Alabama guy doesn't look bad, I tell you.
Is that Ballard? Is the other voice Ballard?
Yes.
He's talking
about how much he loves to trade back, which he's done.
He's already had enough of Jim Irsay. That will be a Twitter quote. Like, everything you say is a Twitter quote. Can you shut up? Because now, this is what Ballard's basically saying. Now the price is even going more up to move into that number one spot. If it was 3 first-round picks or 2 first-round picks before it, if I am the Bears, Ryan Poles, I'm at another pick. We know who you want. We know who you're going to go get. Price is going to keep on going up, or I'll just call the Texans.
You know what I say to that? Pay the price. Let's get Bryce. Let's go. Yeah, I know you like that one. I know you like that
It was
one.
Good, but you're just being so obnoxious about the Colts makes me hope that they don't get Bryce Young because you don't want any part of C.J. Stroud, which I think is ridiculous. And I get it. I like Bryce Young better than C.J. Stroud. But I'm seeing you right now. If I know you guys can't see us, but Hickey's dancing and he's doing the Cabbage Patch Kid dance, and you just think he's already got Bryce Young. I really want you to get someone other than Bryce Young just to see how you do, how you spin that narrative.
I've already told you, it's Bryce or bust.
Okay. You also said you want to know part of Carson Wentz, and then within 30 seconds of acquiring Carson Wentz, you said that they took the money and run, and they robbed Howie Roseman of the Eagles. You will quickly turn
that
and will embrace C.J. Stroud or Will Levis if they get him.
Really poorly.
Yeah. All righty. Let's hear from Shane Steichen. He discusses core principles for building this Colts team.
Our culture is going to be built on four pillars, and one's going to be character. And number two is the preparation. And number three is consistency. And number four is relentless.
You know who he sounds like? Joe Judge. That was very Joe Judge-like.
Don't you dare.
But you hear what I'm saying.
It was less...
No, that was very Joe Judge-like.
Military mantra like Joe Judge was, this is my way, this is what we're doing. He just was...
That sounded very much like that. Patrick Mahomes says Andy Reid was going to bench anyone that tried to watch Rihanna's halftime show, The Jimmy Kimmel Show.
You at all watching Rihanna's performance during this?
I didn't, but I heard it was great. But Coach Reid told us, he said, if you go out to watch the performance, just keep walking because you're not playing the rest of the year.
You're telling me Mahomes and Chris Jones say, hey, Coach, we don't need to hear the halftime adjustments. We're going to go watch Rihanna. That they be benching Mahomes and Chris Jones?
Evan McPherson's happy that he's not on the Chiefs, that's for sure.
Now, if it was some third-string offensive lineman, a little bit different. If it was a star player, good line by Andy Reid. I would also imagine that was said in kind of a jovial way a little bit to ease some of the tension at halftime and kind of crack a few smiles. I don't think anyone was seriously thinking about going out there and watching Rihanna.
I'd hope not. Yeah, that's. I would agree with that.
Alrighty, Steve Spagnuolo will join us next.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Alrighty, Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. I had a chance before the show to have an exclusive conversation with Chiefs defensive coordinator Steve Spagnuolo today, and our wonderful equipment here, as what happens in the radio world, had some technical difficulties for the first question, answer, and a half. Let's say, so we did end up getting 15 minutes on tape, and we'll play that for you right now. Here is part of my exclusive conversation with the three-time Super Bowl champion, the Chiefs defensive coordinator, and Steve Spagnuolo.
But I tip my hat off to the guys. When we needed to make a couple plays, we did, and then we kind of turned it over to Patrick, and he did his thing. So thank God for us, we ended up having more points than they did.
I'll tell you what I was really impressed about with your defense, and we know Jalen Hurts was incredible in the game, and he did a good job through the air and then also on the ground, but you guys really did shut down their running backs, Coach. What was the key there?
Well, it was a focus going in. We knew we couldn't play these guys very well if they were two-dimensional, so we had to take something away, and we focused on the run part of it. Now, I give Jalen Hurts all kinds of credit. That he is an impressive, talented quarterback that runs that offense as good as anybody. And he just put some throws on the money. I was extremely impressed with him. My hat goes off to him and what they did and their offensive staff. I mean, they came up with plays early. You know, they kind of had us behind a little bit. And fortunately, you know, we rallied up at halftime. Our guys never, you know, stuck their head in the sand. They came out, played well, got a couple of stops, like I said, and we were able to turn around a little bit. But I thought what Philadelphia did was pretty good.
We know the Chiefs throughout the years have been down before at halftime or in a big game. What was the vibe and the feel in the locker room at halftime down by 10?
Yeah, we were a little, you know, listen, we were a little surprised. That kind of, yeah, they punched us in the mouth a little bit and you're a little shell-shocked. But once we got in there, it was a long halftime. So the message early, we kind of had two messages or two five-minute segments where we visited with the guys. But early it was, look, even as bad as it feels, because nobody likes to give up 24 points and a half, we were only down 10 points, and we just kept reminding ourselves it was 10 points. Our offense was getting the ball first. You know, Patrick, him and the other 10, they go out and do their thing, and we'll be right back in it. And that's what happened. Gave us a little bit of juice. We came out, we get a stop, holding to a field goal, then get a couple of stops, and, you know, before you know it, we're ahead. So, you know, our guys are resilient. The whole team I'm talking about, from quarterback right through the defense, and fortunately for us, it worked again, you know, this past game.
I thought that field goal, bending but don't breaking, early on in that second half was enormous for you guys to hold them to that field goal and make it a 27-21 game even though you were trailing.
Yeah, that was big, and this is going to go lost in the whole shuffle here, but there was a key third and, I don't know if it was third and five or third and four down in the red zone. They came out in an empty. We had a particular check-in that we did put in at halftime, and I think it caused their coach to call a timeout, which was good because I think they might have run a different play there. And then when they came back out, you know, fortunately for us, they threw it underneath, I believe. We got it tackled before we got to the sticks and they kicked the field goal. But that was important. I mean, our offense could just come down and scored, and we certainly didn't want to go back to 10 points behind again. So it was things like that in the game that, you know, helped us to eventually win it.
Steve Spagnuolo here with us, the world champion, three-time world champion defensive coordinator in the NFL, one with the Giants and two with the Kansas City Chiefs. Going into this game, Spags, there was a lot of talk about their defense and then also their offensive line. I know you don't need any extra motivation for a Super Bowl, but did you feel like your team was getting a little disrespected? Did you sense that from your players throughout the week?
You know, it's funny. Our heads are buried in those offices as coaches, so I don't really get to see much or hear much, and, you know, so we're not privy to it. But somebody mentioned it to me later in the week, and, you know, if that's what was out there and it gave our guys a little bit of inspiration, great. I don't think we needed any more than the fact that we were playing in a huge game. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than the Super Bowl. But listen, you know, people say what they want before the game. That's okay. You still got to go out and play it. And I think our guys understand that it's what goes on between the white lines that matters most.
I know Hurts was unbelievable. The fumble was also big. Nick Bolton picks it up and takes it into the end zone. And he must have had a second one in the game as well, coaches. How about him and what he's been able to do for your team all throughout the year?
Yeah, he's key. Wouldn't that have been terrific if that, if that second one had been a scoop and score? He might have been the MVP of the game. I mean, he got the trifecta on the first one. You know, he causes the fumble, he picks the fumble up, and he scores a touchdown. That was huge in the game. Quite honestly, being honest with you, Zach, I forget about that. You know, I'm just so concerned about not letting them score points. But for us to get 7 points on defense, that's big. Nick Bolton is a key cog in what we do and how we operate. I can't say enough about him. You know, if I'm gonna toot anybody's horn, it's going to be Nick's. I didn't think he got near enough credit this year playing the linebacker position, but that's me. You know, I'm certainly biased. But I think people will realize the kind of player, exceptional Mike linebacker that he is as we go forward here. So I was really happy for him.
What did you think about the review? Did you think there was any chance that play was going to stand on the second one? Because in the stadium, I was sitting next to a few Chiefs fans, and even they thought that one was coming back, Coach.
You're talking about the second fumble that he scooped up? Yeah. Well, I it's one of those, I believe they ruled it incomplete. My guess is if they had ruled it complete fumble score, that they would have left it that way, because it was kind of one of those that was 50-50. But, you know, the officials saw it a certain way. And that's how it goes. You know, sometimes you win those, sometimes you lose. But it really would have been nice for Nick and for us to have gotten that. That would have been, I think it was the first play of the second half, so it would have been huge.
Steve Spagnuolo here with us. I want to have you just look back at Chris Jones a little bit, Coach, because we all know what he means to this team and what he's done in this league as well. You've coached a lot of great players. Just how does he kind of rank in all the players that you've coached throughout the years with what he's able to do on the defensive side of the ball for you guys?
Yeah, he's as probably the most dominant inside player that I've ever had or been around. He makes a huge difference in any game and certainly in big games. And the one nice thing about him is he's such a great athlete and long and talented that he's flexible enough to go outside. We did a little bit of that in the game. We did a little bit of putting him on the center. We were trying to get back to that again, you know, in that third and fourth quarter, and never got the situation where we could do it. But he's so flexible and so dominant. The things that go unnoticed is he did some good things in the run game in this game where he's just dominant, knocks the line of scrimmage back, and our guys feed off of that. But he's an exceptional player. I mean, I told him the other day, now listen, I'm biased, but to me he was the defensive player of the year. You know, hopefully we can, going forward, maybe he'll get that someday. But he's certainly worthy of all the recognition that he gets.
Steve Spagnuolo here with us. So, Spags, I thought it was a very unselfish play by McKinnon because he could have easily walked in that end zone, and then you guys would have to go back on the field, and who knows what would have happened. In that moment, I'm sure you were happy that he went down right at the 1 or 2 yard line.
Well, to be honest with you, Zach, I had mixed feelings. He's an intelligent. I love that kid, and it was an intelligent play. But part of me, after giving up that touchdown, part of me wanted to go back out and close it somehow. You know, I mean, I knew that we were going to score, or get a field goal or something in there. And, you know, the pride in you as a defensive coach or a defensive player is you want to go out and help close it for your team. But exceptional move by him on that, the Jet, as we call him. Just a real smart football player. Team guy, right? I mean, he got a chance to score a touchdown in the Super Bowl, and he doesn't do it because he realizes the most important thing is to win the game. So my hat goes off to him.
Were you surprised they called holding on that 3rd and 8 to give you guys the first down?
You know, I haven't seen the play, so I don't really know. I mean, listen, I know in games we've played, we've had that against us too. So however they saw it, they saw it. And, you know, listen, again, if they don't call the holding penalty, I believe we kick a field goal, and then I got confidence that our guy's going to go out and find a way to win it in a 3-point game. But they called, and that's the way it is, so we'll take it.
I know there weren't a lot of drives in the second half, but what really changed with your defense in the second half, Coach?
Yeah, we made, again, there were a few minor adjustments. We talked about some things that we were going to do. We got a chance to do a couple of them. The one I talked about when they came out and, you know, they had an empty formation and we made an adjustment. That was key. And then, you know, I just thought our guys hung in there, tackled, you know, made a couple of, like you said, a couple of key stops. Third down was really important. We didn't play well overall on third down, but in that second half we did, and we were able to get off the field, and that was key to get the ball back to Patrick.
I remember last time we had you on after the Chiefs won that Super Bowl a few years ago, I asked you when you sensed that your defense could be a championship caliber defense. And I remember, Spags, you said it was in the game where Mahomes got hurt a few years back. Your defense made a big play late, and that really created a domino effect in terms of confidence. You talked earlier about this being, you know, some guys, a very young group. When did you realize that this group could go to a level of a championship caliber kind of team?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I mean, all year long, it was really just the grind to keep getting them better. I didn't know where that would culminate or what we would become. I do think that we peaked as a group in that Cincinnati game because Joe Burrow throwing the football all over the ball yard and other games, the first game we had played them. I thought we gained a lot of confidence there. And, you know, again, we made just enough plays in this past game to help us win. I think, you know, I think all the guys would tell you we would have liked to have performed overall better. You know, the long passes, you know, if you could take those two away, and you can't do that, it would have made all the difference in the world. But I think it was a slow, gradual progress. We got better as the season went on, and we played our best football at the end, you know, with a chance to maybe play better in this past Super Bowl game. But I was really, really proud of the way the guys performed all year long.
Now, you know how it is. Every game's different, and you never know how the games are going to play out. But you go back to that AFC title game. You guys do not get to the Super Bowl, nor are obviously standing where you are today as a three-time champion if it wasn't for the way that your defense played up against Burrow in that AFC title game.
Yeah, again, I go back. I was really proud of the way the guys played there. Listen, to hold them to 20 points, that offense, again, like Philadelphia's, explosive. They can put up a bunch of points at any time. Joe Burrow, I think, is elite. And all the other weapons that they have that we know about. But our guys stood up, and, you know, the thing we forget about, L.J. Snead got hurt like the third play of that game. We're without our best corner, and those young guys stepped it up. So, yeah, that was we won't ever forget that, and it did get us to the Super Bowl. So that I think, is a feather in the cap of the defensive guys.
What is there to say, Coach, about Patrick Mahomes at this stage? Because nothing surprises me anymore. But this is probably, I thought, his most impressive year, because you take away Tyreek, and the way that he really did spread that ball out all throughout the season was very impressive.
Yeah, we can't listen. None of us can say enough about Patrick and how much he means to us and the type of guy that he is. I mean, his leadership permeates all the way through the team, over to defense, special teams, the whole thing. And he is what he is. He's what everybody sees in terms of how elite he is and the great plays that he makes. And I'm sure glad I'm on a team with him at quarterback.
Steve Spagnuolo, a few more before we let you run, and I appreciate you doing this. As you're now a three-time Super Bowl champion, Chiefs win the Super Bowl on Sunday up against the Eagles in a crazy game. You've been with Andy for a long time, and you were there in Philly with him too. To see him now be a two-time Super Bowl champion after all those years of wondering if he was ever going to win one, and now he has two, just how do you kind of reflect it, and what does that mean to you for Andy Reid?
Yeah, listen, Andy means the world to me. The first guy I grab when we won both these Super Bowls is him, because I feel that strongly about him. I'm just so happy for him getting it. I mean, to me, he's a five-time Super Bowl winner. When I say that, that's where I put him, in that group, even though he doesn't have it statistically. But it's really nice to know that they can call him as a head coach, as a two-time Super Bowl winner. That certainly, listen, we all know he's a future Hall of Famer. And he's a future Hall of Famer statistically as a head coach, but more as a person and a man. And there isn't a guy that's worked for him, that's been around any, that doesn't feel that way. He just has that much effect on people, players, people that work for him and with him. And I can't say enough about him. I'm sure glad I'm working for him.
Nothing against Jonathan Gannon or Shane Steichen, because there's a lot of people that are deserving of jobs in this league. We talked before about maybe you getting a second chance to be a head coach. Eric Bieniemy hasn't got a first chance to be a head coach yet. Does that at all like rub you the wrong way when you see their defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator get head coaching jobs today, and you and Eric still have not got that? You got it once with the Rams, but Eric hasn't got it at all.
Well, listen, it's an interesting question. I never feel that way. Would I like the opportunity to do again? Yeah. I mean, it's a prideful business, and you know, I think the second time around is always better for a lot of people. It's been proven. Would I like another chance? Yes. But I'm happy for those other guys. Listen, Jonathan Gannon was with us with the Rams. He was a pro scout for us at the time, so I'm happy for him. And I wish all those guys luck. And I do know this. I got a really good job. God has blessed me with the experiences I've had. And if it's in God's plans for me to be a head coach down the road, I will be. It won't have anything to do with anything else. And if that happens, I'll be a happy man. If not, I'm very, very content with what I'm doing right now. And listen, I get to enjoy a parade tomorrow. That's not too bad either, right?
What are you going to be like at the parade? You're now a vet at these things.
I just hang out on the one. When Murray and I just hang out on one of the buses or floats or whatever they have, and we just take it all in and enjoy it. I love watching the people at those things.
Last thing I'll ask you, Coach, that moment after the game with you, Andy Reid, Eric Bieniemy embracing was pretty special. Just, I know you said you haven't seen it yet again, but you lived it. What was going on in that little conversation and all the elation and euphoria right after the game?
I'll be honest with you, there's not much conversation because you can't hear anything. It's so loud and everybody's jumping around, but there's a lot of smiles and a lot of hugging, but there's a lot of I love yous. And like I say, Andy was the first guy I wanted to grab because of what he means to me. And then after that, then I'm just looking for my wife, and that's a challenge in and of itself. Because we never talk about plans. Where are you going to be after if we win this? Because heaven forbid you don't want to talk about it before it happens. But just love Andy, and it was a great moment. And then everything that happens the half hour and into the hours of the night that happened after that are just very, very special.
I know you have a lot of family that are Patriot fans. You also worked for the Eagles years ago, and you have a lot of close people that know you that are Eagles fans. You're not going to be popular with your friends, Coach.
Yeah, I went through it when I'd go back to New England where my family, where I grew up. But listen, hopefully the Eagles fans won't kick us out of Philadelphia. We still have a home there. But listen, they're passionate, and I would love it. I thank God we won. I wasn't sure if I was going to have to sell the place if that had happened. But right now I can keep going back to the Jersey Shore where all the Eagles fans are. But really, I'm very, very blessed and very fortunate and humbled by it all, Zach. I really am.
Well, Coach, really do appreciate you doing this. Once again, congratulations, and enjoy the offseason. Thanks so much. You deserve it.
Appreciate it, Zach. Thanks for having me on. Take care.
You're listening to The Zach Gelb Show.
Zach Gelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. So I have one big takeaway from the Steve Spagnuolo interview. And it's something that I thought before the interview, and then he added on to that thought. It's the right decision by Jerick McKinnon to go down at the 2-yard line. But I thought about this earlier this morning, and I was going to say this on the air tonight. And then I heard what Coach Spagnuolo said, and I go, funny how that works. So Steve Spagnuolo, who just joined us, he said that he had some mixed emotions. Yes, it's an unselfish play, but he kind of wanted the back in McKinnon to score because, selfishly, Spags wanted the defense to be a reason really why they go out there and be champions by making the stop. Because the drive before that, they allowed the touchdown and the two-point conversion. And you could hear, even when a guy wins a championship, that there's some regrets in that game where, yeah, they made the plays when they needed to, but it wasn't their best performance. And I appreciate the competitor and the coach in Spags for saying that, because if I win a championship, I don't care if it's 13-3 or if it's 45-40. I don't care if it's low scoring, high scoring. You're world champions. You played a role throughout the year, even if it wasn't shown on the biggest stage necessarily all throughout the game. But Spags saying that he was kind of hoping McKinnon would go in is kind of what I was thinking this morning. Where, Hickey, my thought this morning was, if I was McKinnon, you grow up dreaming as a kid scoring the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. I know they're begging you to score. Under 2 minutes left, Hurts could have easily gone down the field and tied up the game, and maybe they go for two in the win. Like, I don't know what would happen. I think I would have been selfish in the moment. I would not have been a good teammate. I would have absolutely been selfish in the moment, and I would have gone in the end zone for the touchdown if I was McKinnon. I don't think I could have fallen down at the two, even though it means guaranteed my team is going to win just as long as they don't botch the kick. Selfishly, and I know it's the wrong thing to say, right? I would have gone in for the touchdown. I would have wanted the glory. I would have wanted the story. And I would have banked at the defense. All you got to do at that point is keep them out of the end zone. Easier said than done. They would, you know, hope that they could do that in the final 2 minutes.
I would have been too scared. I would have went down. I wouldn't want to have to then look at Andy Reid. I wouldn't want to have to look at Eric Bieniemy. Maybe the rest of my Chiefs teammates that are saying, you idiot, get down. He would have won the game. I would have been too scared. I would have got down, been a good teammate at the two, basically guaranteed the win, put the ring on my finger, and not feel too guilty that I didn't get, you know, the touchdown stat.
You know what's funny? And maybe this is, I don't know, old school, new school, but I'm considered new school, so it would go against this argument. But my dad, unprovoked after the game, goes, I hate when the player goes down. And I said to him, I go, you know why he went down, right? Because then they could run out the clock, right? It's after the penalty. And they didn't have enough timeouts to stop it, and you're only going to get the ball back with like 10 seconds. You have a field goal. My dad just said, he goes, I just always take the touchdown. He goes, because I get scared that something happens on the snap, on the hold, even though it's a chip shot. My dad even prefaced it by saying, I know it's a chip shot, but then you miss it. He goes, I'd rather just take the touchdown, and I would trust my defense to keep him out of the end zone, which I thought was interesting. Like, don't get me wrong. I totally get why McKinnon goes down. I'll be abundantly clear. It is the right decision to go down. I'm just saying, if you put myself in the shoes of Jerick McKinnon, and I'm 2 yards away from being known as the guy that had the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl, I would have gone into the end zone. Now, the other side to that is, if you go into the end zone and you score, and then Hurts comes marching down the field, the game goes into overtime, and I know there's new rules in overtime, and then you lose, then everyone on Monday saying only if Jerick McKinnon would have fallen down before the end zone at the 1 or the 2 yard line. For me, when I'm looking at the reward, being known as the guy, and I know what the risk is, I'm going for the reward because I would want to be the man that scored the game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl. And I couldn't pass that up, personally. It's selfish, it's egotistical, but I'm authentic. I just tell you how I rock and roll. That would be me.
Could have been the hero. Same breath, could have been the GOAT. I would rather, I guess, shy away from the personal fame and say, I just want to guarantee a ring. I want to win a championship.
That's why you're not fun.
You know, some people are team players, others are individual-based.
That's why you're not fun.
I think winning a championship is fun.
I'm
taking a knee at the 2 yard line to guarantee myself winning a Super Bowl.
I'm taking the
risk. My career would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
That celebration. You know what, actually, you know when I'll have the fun? After the game. In the locker room. At the club. At the parade. The next month after the season. That's when I'll have my fun. That's when I'll bask in the glory, kind of like Juju Smith-Schuster is doing right now.
Hold on. I don't think he's having fun today.
Oh, I think he's having fun.
No.
He knew what he was doing and posting that tweet.
He knew what he was doing. I don't think he expected, and I actually think the tweet is funny, and I'm fine with the tweet. But if you, Michael Parsons now tweeting about it, dragging him, and we'll talk about this on the other side. LeGarrette Blount just put Juju Smith-Schuster in a body bag. I think naturally as a human, we've all had tweets that have backfired. He's getting dragged. I think it's funny. But the majority of people, like 98% of people in the NFL world, are dragging him.
I bet he's laughing, though, at the response. Like, he probably saw A.J. Brown's tweet and is laughing. Like one of those things where it's like when people get mad and you know, like, you're trying to poke the bear, he's laughing, I bet, at people getting mad.
Yeah, Juju Smith-Schuster seems like the guy that does nothing in the class project, or very minimal in the class project, and then takes all the credit for it.
Hey, he had one big drive. I'll give him credit. I think it was, what, fourth quarter? He had, like, probably 3, 4, 5 catches on one drive. Other than that, I mean, he didn't really do a lot, I will admit.
Put it this way.
But, hey, he's a champion. He's a champion.
Other than the whole play, you don't really remember Juju Smith-Schuster much in the game.
No.
I know
right
he had 7 catches for 53 yards. There's so many other storylines that I look back in that game. Now I always remember Juju Smith-Schuster as the player that went after James Bradberry following the hold after the Super Bowl and then just got dragged. Be a fun TikTok, though, probably the next 24, 48 hours. Zach Gilp Show, CBS Sports Radio.